Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Mindy Rosen, and Mindy is the Senior Vice President for Communications and Marketing for Downtown Cincinnati, Inc., also known as DCI. And Mindy, I love the holidays. I love being downtown. I enjoy so much just going from store to store, all the beautiful decorations. You've got a lot in store for folks this season, don't you?
Oh, we do. Downtown is going to be jam-packed with all kinds of fun activities for the holidays. There's the ice rink on Fountain Square. We've got rappelling Santa, free trolley rides, free carriage rides, all kinds of great stuff.
For folks listening, even outside of the Cincinnati region, folks maybe in Huntington or Charleston or Lexington or Dayton, Columbus, it might make sense to come down and have a fun weekend.
You're absolutely right. And we even have a new hotel. It's called the 21C Museum Hotel. It's opened up on Walnut Street across from the Aronoff Center. It is gorgeous, a historic building. They've renovated it just beautifully. And it even has a fabulous restaurant called the Metropole.
If you haven't been downtown lately, especially in the Over the Rhine area, it's just totally transformed.
It is. It's transformational what's happened in Over the Rhine, including Washington Park, where there will be lots of holiday activities for the first time ever in that gorgeous park that's been renovated.
People can actually just schedule on their calendars all of the various things that are going on, and can they find that on your website?
Yes. If you go to downtowncincinnati.com, we've got all the holiday activities for the Central Business District as well as Over the Rhine. They're all listed on the website. There's also a wonderful free holiday event booklet. You can pick that up at the Visitor Center on Fountain Square, or stop one of the downtown ambassadors who are out and about all the time. They've also got copies of this
and
booklet.
And how can you find one of those individuals?
Well, the ambassadors are always on Fountain Square, and then they're throughout downtown. They wear bright blue jackets, khaki pants, and they say Downtown Ambassador on the back of their jacket.
I still love to go to the ice rink.
Oh, I love the ice rink. It opened on Thanksgiving Day and runs through February. And in January, they do something called broom ball. It is playing hockey with sneakers and a broom on the ice. And they have 50 different leagues that play broom ball.
There's a real business reason for promoting our downtown area, isn't there?
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's an economic engine for the whole region, particularly during the holiday season. We want to drive lots of traffic to downtown. There's restaurants, there's shopping, there's events, there's museums. Because don't forget, the Taft Museum of Art has just wonderful exhibits, including Antique Christmas. The Contemporary Arts Center has an exhibit of photographs by Andy Warhol right now. So great stuff happening.
In terms of dollars and cents, what is the estimated economic impact of the holiday season to our region?
Well, according to Dr. Jeff Rexhausen from University of Cincinnati, the economic impact of just the holiday season on downtown is $5 million. It really is significant.
If folks would like to learn more, they can go to your website. Maybe you can say that one more time.
Yes, the website is downtowncincinnati.com. It's just packed with information about the holiday events, all of our restaurants, our shops, the hotels. It's all there.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Mindy Rosen. Mindy is Senior Vice President, Communications and Marketing, Director for Downtown Cincinnati, Inc., also known as DCI. And so for folks who haven't been downtown for a while, maybe people who live in the outskirts, how do you think the whole perception of our downtown area is changing? Do you still think that people are a little leery about coming into downtown from time to time?
Well, once a year at DCI, we take a survey and we want to test the waters. What are people thinking? What are their impressions of downtown? And we just got the results back for this year, and it was pretty darn amazing. 90% of the survey respondents agree that downtown is a positive, fun place to be. They love dining out. They love going to the new parks. We've got two new parks that have opened up downtown, Smale Riverfront Park, which is right next to the Banks development, and then Washington Park in Over the Rhine. Most of the people who took the survey don't even work downtown. They don't live downtown. They don't work downtown. They come from all over to visit downtown, and they've had very positive things to say.
Well, that's very encouraging, because I think those of us who are downtown regularly know that absolutely is the case. And, you know, you mentioned the Banks. We've been talking about this, quote, development that was in the works for the Banks. Finally, in the last couple of years, we're seeing the results of those many years. And it's just a phenomenal success, isn't it?
An immediate success, really, truly. The apartment complex at the Banks is called Current at the Banks, 300 apartments. There's a waiting list to get into that building. They're going to start phase two any day now because there's such a demand for apartments. The restaurants that have opened at the Banks, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, Crave, Mahogany, Toby Keith's, Tin Roof, Johnny Rockets, all doing very, very well from day one.
We talked earlier about a couple of the initiatives for the holidays. And again, I still can't get enough of all of the wonderful things happening. If people do want to learn about how they can plan their holiday calendar, all the information's on your website?
It is, downtowncincinnati.com. It's just a terrific website, a great resource filled with not only holiday events, but all the restaurants, all the shops, the hotels, the museums, galleries. It's all listed at downtowncincinnati.com.
And certainly for those listening outside of the immediate area, they can go online, take a look, plan a weekend vacation. Because, you know, the reality of it is, unless you actually plan for those kinds of things, make the point to put it on your calendar. Have a family outing, create memories. I mean, we have a beautiful, amazing city that we should be taking advantage of.
I love that idea because I think it's so important to start making memories and traditions with your family. And what better place to do it than downtown?
So, Mindy, where do you see the city going, our downtown area going in the next year or so?
Well, I want to see more and more people visit downtown. There's so much to offer, but I know we still have people who are not familiar with downtown, haven't been down in 10 years. It's time to make a visit, plan a trip, come downtown, see for yourself, and I think you're going to be impressed.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Well, Tom, we're right in the middle of the holidays, but year-end is right around the corner, and when that clock strikes 12 on December 31st, there are many tax deductions that will go by the wayside.
Hopefully they won't go by the wayside because you will have already taken advantage of them.
And one of those is charitable contributions, you know, something that I try to do every year, get rid of the old, make room for the new, or at least that's what I've tried to tell our children.
Oh, as long as you're not telling me that.
What many people do is they do take this time to really clean out their closets, get rid of clothes that maybe their children used to wear, but they've been saving and they haven't gotten rid of old toys, games, things that are still good condition. You can get a tax deduction for those. So go through your house. Think about what may be cluttered to you could really be useful to someone else, and Uncle Sam will give you a tax break for making that contribution.
How about that old sweatshirt of mine that's got a couple holes in it and some paint splatters? You think I could contribute that and get a deduction?
It has to be in good condition. The product that you're contributing has to be in good condition, and you need to go to thrift store valuations. You can find those online to actually determine what the value is. Sometimes if you make a larger gift, you even have more criteria that you have to adhere to in terms of being able to take the deduction. But generally for most things in your home, you can make the contribution as long as the contribution's in good condition.
And you can find values on the internet. In many cases, the thrift shop itself may provide you with recommended values.
And you know, many people get confused. They think that if they've made a pledge at the end of the year, that counts as a contribution deduction. I always remind people that pledges don't count. You have to actually make the contribution before December 31st in order to take the deduction on 2012's tax return, unless you charge it. You can say, I want to charge it, and you can put it on your credit card. And even if you don't pay the bill until 2013, you can still deduct that amount in 2012.
Yes, it just needs to be recorded as a credit card transaction during 2012. Another big item that some people give is stock. And the goal there is that you get the fair market value of the stock, not your cost basis. So if you've held the stock for more than a year, you not only avoid paying tax from selling the stock, but you get to take a deduction equal to the fair market value.
Yes, I call that having my cake and eating it too, because you get to take the full value of the stock that you've just given, as you mentioned, and you forever avoid paying tax on that. Now, one thing that I will say contrary to that, if you have stock that you have bought that's gone down in value, then you want to sell the stock, take the loss, and contribute the cash proceeds. Also, people get confused on documentation requirements. So if you have a gift
that you're making to a church or other type of charitable organization, and it's key. It has to be to a qualified charity. It can't be just to somebody who needs the money. It has to be a qualified charity. Then the documentation requirements can be handled through a bank statement, canceled check, that type of thing. But anything 250 and over, you actually have to have some written documentation from the organization confirming receipt of that gift. And then, as we mentioned, if you give bigger gifts, you may have to have the charity actually sign a form that gets included with your tax return. And sometimes, depending on the size of the gift, you may actually have to have an outside appraisal that accompanies your tax return in order to take advantage of the deduction. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney, and this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Roger Grine. Roger, you're an inspiration to many people. You've had a fascinating life, a fascinating story, a self-made millionaire. You've been a very successful businessman, a highly regarded philanthropist, but you've started something else recently. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your philanthropy.
We started Magnify Giving, and that started right here, the idea at NK University through the Morris Foundation about 11 years ago. And that concept was shared to me through your former president, Dr. Votruba, about evolving students and giving them the decision-making process of how to give money away. And he just shared that concept with me, and God's been generous to me all my life. And I thought, my, what a wonderful concept. When I write a check to the charity, somebody opens the envelopes and puts to use. If we can involve the younger generation, that's another level. And maybe someday, because of this process, they'll be more aware of the needs of others and more apt to give back their time, talent, and treasures.
Well, what inspired you to be so generous?
I guess my parents, seeing my parents, particularly my mother, help out people. I know the first gift I made, I was starting out in business and really didn't have much to my name, and my great-grandma was his little sister's the poor, and she had passed away, and they came to me and asked for a donation. They was probably expecting $10 or $15, $20 because I was this fledgling young person that just out of college. You know, I had saved up $1,200. I think I gave him a check for $1,000. But by the same token, I told nobody. I didn't tell my parents. I mean, the way I was brought up, you don't know what the left hand is the right hand doing. You don't do it for publicity. So I just kept my mouth shut. The guy probably fell off the chair.
It made you really feel good to write that check, though, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Everything I received is a gift from God. I feel that it's a responsibility. So I really take that on as a challenge.
You've been very successful in your business life as
yes.
well. You started mowing lawns because you couldn't find another job and built up an accounting business.
I really started when I was 4 or 5 years old, picking up pop bottles and beer bottles. They were worth 2 cents in the nickel. Then I used that money to buy a wagon and recycle newspapers. Then I used that money to buy a lawnmower when I was in grade school. It was wound up cutting 30, 40 yards a week through grade school, high school, and college, and that helped pay for my tuition. Like you said, my business career, I thought, well, I'll go to college and major in investments because I was making this money, and I thought people have money like they invest in securities. So I did that, and I graduated. I had a hard time finding a job. The local banker got me a job. Then was the First National Bank on 4th and Walnut. I worked there a year, and they fired me. They said they couldn't read my writing. So I went back to the people I cut trades for and said, hey, now I can do your tax return. So I did 35 returns the first year in the basement of my house. The next year, there was a little corn shop that gave me a desk. I did 105 in 3 years' time. I went from 105 to 350. Then I moved to a better location. I tripled my business, so I've been a successful CPA now for 45 years with the staff and doing thousands of returns.
Well, thanks for your time today, and thanks for all you've done for the community. For Business Wise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Mike Burrows. Mike is the president and founder of the Mortgage House of America, and Mike, rates are so low out there today for certain qualified borrowers. What does it take to get the best rate out there?
I don't want to get too technical, but you've got to have a good credit score, generally speaking, 720 or more. And if you don't know your credit score, there's plenty of websites that offer them free. Go and find out what it is. You got to have income. The banks aren't willing to make loans anymore if you don't have a job. You've got to have a few assets of liquidity. They don't want you to miss your first payment. You've got to have equity in your home. So the more equity you have, the better deal you could get down to where the lows are now.
Well, you know, you mentioned equity because I do hear commercials from time to time that suggest that even if you're underwater, if your loan currently is higher than the value of your home, that you still may be able to refinance. Is that true?
That is true. It's called an acronym HARP. And it stands for Home Affordability Refinance Program. HARP 1 was not successful by the Obama administration. Now they've come out with HARP 2. HARP 2 says we don't care what your second mortgage balance is. We'll focus on the first only. And you can do that on your single family home. You can do it on a condo. You can actually do it on an investment property if you owned your home at one time and rented it out. You can also do it on a second home. But the government wants to try to help people who are current with their loan, can't be delinquent, be able to take advantage of these low rates and get out of whatever rate they're paying now.
So the idea is if you have a first and a second mortgage, you could refinance the first mortgage. Whoever's writing that loan would then come in place of that and have a first mortgage and hopefully at a lower, you know, obviously you'd only do that if you're getting a lower rate.
And the caveat, and there's several, but one of them is you got to get the second lender to agree to go back into second place. And most of them will if they see that you're actually saving money and improving your financial position.
Mike, I know that for us, you did a traditional loan, but do you also do commercial loans or new construction loans?
In my earlier career, I did. Today, I don't do commercial loans. Construction loans, I do, but if I had 30 lenders 5 years ago, I probably only have two today, and you've got to have really lots of money to put down for a construction loan. And the problem or the resistance from the consumer is most banks will only grant you an adjustable rate mortgage until the house is done. Then they'll give you whatever the fixed rate is at that time.
So your best customer, the one that you can bring the most value to, is just a traditional customer who's looking to buy or refinance a home?
Yes, absolutely. Conforming or jumbo, doesn't make any difference.
What is a conforming loan?
Conforming is a loan of $417,000 or less that Freddie or Fannie will buy.
I see. And a jumbo is something
anything
more than
above $417,000.
Are the rates different?
They are. Jumbo lenders typically do get a higher rate. It's not justified in my career, but they get a higher rate because they can.
Well, theoretically, it's a little less liquid for the bank, right? Because they can't sell it to Fannie Mae.
That's true, but banks are drowning in cash today. And if you know anything about treasuries today, the United States government will pay you like 0.10 if you give them your money for a year.
Mike Burrows, what's your cell phone number if people want to call you?
513-235-6970.
Thank you for being our guest, and thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ken Recton. Ken is the Interim Executive Director of the Senior Services of Northern Kentucky, and our population is aging. And as such, we, what I call the baby boom generation, I feel like we're the sandwich generation. I have young adult kids, an aging mother that we're still looking after.
Yes.
And it just seems like all of the issues are compounding on the baby boomer generation to take care of both sides of that.
Sure. And what we find too is then we got those boomerang kids that we thought were gone and they come back and we have them in the basement. Care of the aging population is the major component of Senior Services of Northern Kentucky. And we realize how important this is. I think it's important, too, that the public realize how this population is growing exponentially. Although population as a whole in the U.S. does increase, the population of the 60 to death population is increasing much more rapidly. In fact, in the Northern Kentucky area, and that's eight counties that we do work in Northern Kentucky, it's projected that we'll have a 71% increase over the 2000 census by 2030.
And it causes some real financial strains on our whole system, doesn't it? Because
yes,
obviously the older, especially the ones that are much beyond age 65 require more medical care, in many cases more social services.
And that's a real discussion for another day, is what level of service should be provided. We're all living longer, and we're all providing a whole lot of services, and the money spent on the aging population is phenomenally large.
Well, Ken, in your role as Executive Director of Senior Services of Northern Kentucky, how does your organization help this aging population?
We're a 50-year-old organization. In 1962, it was two parishes, one Episcopalian and one Catholic, that came together and formed the first senior activity center in the state of Kentucky. Now, the interesting component of this is that this happened prior to federal funding. It wasn't until 65 in the Great Society legislation that Lyndon Johnson went in and actually promulgated the Older Americans Act. That act allowed for many of the services that we provide this day. So our Meals on Wheels program, our transportation program, our protection program, and our senior activity centers are in a great part funded by those federal dollars, which come through the state, through the local council on aging. There's one in southwestern Ohio as well as northern Kentucky, to the provider agencies that provide these services. So those are the things we do. I affectionately say EATS, Rides, Games, and Guards, so that EATS is a nutrition program, the commonly known as Meals on Wheels, and the food at our senior centers. Games is those senior center activities, and Rides is the transportation program, and Guards is that level of protection for the senior that ends up being in a long-term care facility and needs an advocate for his or her service there.
Well, and a lot of those activities are meant, I assume, to keep the seniors as independent as possible before they would go into a facility, for instance, the Meals on Wheels.
Our intention here is to keep viability at home for as long as possible. Not only because that's where they want to be, and that's where they're comfortable, and that's where they want to be, but think about the costs associated with long-term care versus the cost of staying at home.
As a population, we've migrated away from our family homes, right?
Yes.
It used to be that people would stay right home with their family, take care of everyone.
Right.
Now that folks are moving away from where they were born and raised, it becomes a much more of a bigger challenge. But if folks would like information about Senior Services of Northern Kentucky, what's your website?
It's www.seniorservicesnky.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Ken Recton. Ken is the interim executive director for Northern Kentucky Senior Services. Ken, both Tom and I grew up in a different city. We were not born and raised here in Cincinnati. His family is in Maysville, mine's in Huntington, West Virginia. And as such, it presents some problems as we continue to grow older, our parents grow older. How do we as a society handle that situation where we have parents, aging parents, in a different city from where we may currently be living?
There are agencies such as Senior Services and other agencies out there that will follow and will care for and make sure the needs that your parents are being met in the area in which they reside. You know, a phone call to us many times, and truthfully, many phone calls begin after the first of the year, after people have visited their loved one at Christmas time and realize that maybe the care at the nursing home or the extended care facility or assisted living facility isn't to the standards that they want. And they ask us to intervene and mediate that and make sure that the care is being met. So there are agencies in the area in which your parents reside that you can make a call to make that interaction.
Do you think your ability to deliver those services or just in general senior services will be affected by the fiscal cliff, the crisis that's going on now? Because that's some of the things they're talking about cutting are some of these same types of services, I think.
You know, and a lot of people don't understand. They think, well, we're only talking about an 8 to 10% cut in defense spending and Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid. Honestly, the cuts are non-discretionary defense spending, and that includes the Older Americans Act. So we will experience an 8 to 10% cut in revenue that will trickle through to the direct service provision. There's a significant number of meals. That's 10% of the meals that will not be provided to citizens that are receiving meals now in the state of Kentucky. I would argue that there are ways around this, and I would argue that there are opportunities if we approached it more surgically and more with more thought as we approach each one of the programs to find ways to enhance the revenue and to bring about changes that would continue the programs.
Well, what do you think about the whole concept of means testing?
I believe if we allowed many of the programs to do two things, to do means testing, to make a judgment based upon the need of the individual, we would still meet the needs and be supplying those services to the to the most vulnerable in our society. But in addition to that, if we would allow the service deliverers to charge a percentage of the cost of service back to the client, we would soften the demand, and it would be a real increase in revenue to provide more services to more individuals.
So are you saying that these services are free to all people?
It is amazing, Crystal, and that is in 1965 when the Older American Act was passed, the service provider was prohibited from charging for those services. So in effect, if you got a home-delivered meal, I could not charge for that. And to this day, that meal, I am prohibited from charging any amount and cost-sharing any amount of that. I can ask for a contribution, but even the request for the contribution cannot be coercive.
So you just cover Northern Kentucky.
Yes.
But if I'm driving through Indian Hill over in Ohio, it wouldn't surprise me to see a Meals on Wheels van going to those million-dollar houses.
I mean, could that be?
It could be. It could be. And I many times use a prominent, a wealthy individual in Northern Kentucky's name and say, if he did not have the support structure at home to bring him a meal or cook him a meal for him and he was homebound, he would be eligible for a meal.
Folks listening today would like to learn more. They'd like to determine how they can help support senior services. What can they do?
Quick call to us at 859-491-0522, asking for our volunteer coordinator, our opportunities to volunteer and work for the agency, also to support financially. Also, there are opportunities on our website at www.seniorservicesnky.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, you know, for many small business owners, they wear all kinds of hats. They're the salespeople. They're the individuals that may actually do the work or perform the service. And accounting issues and bookkeeping issues and just keeping their basic business records is certainly, for many of them, the last thing on their list.
It's a challenge because it might not be what they've ever done before.
Or they don't feel like it's producing any income. So they put that off until, unfortunately, many times it just becomes a mess and they can't go back and track their income and their expenses very easily.
Yeah, and there's some simple solutions to that, I think. I mean, number one, have a bank account that's just the business bank account. Number two, have some type of accounting system. Hopefully have someone help you set it up because that's the real key. Have an accountant or a friend that's an accountant or whomever you use set up a system for you. You can probably use QuickBooks, sometimes even Quicken, which is basically just an electronic checkbook.
Or similar products just like that. And, you know, have a credit card that's designated just for business purposes because it's so easy to buy something for your business on your personal credit card and forget about it. Not reimburse yourselves for it. You know, our advice, even if you have to put the money in the business checking account yourself and then pay all of your expenses out of that account, including any credit card payments, so that you can keep track of every dime that you spend for the business.
Well, and many credit card companies nowadays will categorize your expenditures, so that actually helps you with the accounting. So you can just do summary entries into your accounting system from the credit card statement.
And, you know, as we enter this next year, many people will have their idea of the American dream, owning their own business, and they're so anxious to get off to a start that they'll put some of these basic processes aside. But the key is, if you can establish a good system, a good process up front, then it's going to make your life much easier.
And much cheaper.
Right, because you will actually be able to take deductions, take advantage of things that you're spending to get your business up and going. Unfortunately, the IRS doesn't come and remind you that you forgot to take a deduction. So you have to make sure that you're tracking every dollar that you're spending so you can take your deduction for that.
And the IRS doesn't help you recreate records either.
No, and unfortunately, we've seen it ourselves that if there are sloppy records and you can't go back and reproduce it, it's a sad situation, not only for the IRS, but for sales tax issues. So it's critical that you get your business records and your processes established. And don't think you have to do it yourself. That's another problem that many people have. They think they have to wear all hats, that they're saving money or saving costs by not engaging people on the outside to help them. But in the long run, it's much more expensive many times.
Yes, it is. You always have to need to remember that you're the owner, you're an executive, even though your company may consist only of you. Sometimes you have to hire outside help.
For example, payroll service to me is a great example of something that many business owners think they can do themselves because it's going to save them money. In the long run, it's generally much less expensive because when you have a professional payroll service handling your payroll, they'll make your payroll taxes on time. If you don't, you may forget, and then penalties can arise. So it's really critical to think about what services it does make the most sense to outsource.
Well, I think that's right. And I think that's a real key to organizing your business is look at what you can do, what your talents are, and where you don't have talents, hire people that do.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Bill Keating Jr. and Todd Foreman. Bill is a partner with Keating, Muthing, and Kleekamp. And Todd, you're a teacher, but you're also work part-time, at least, as a program director with Magnified Giving. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what Magnified Giving is.
Magnified Giving is a local nonprofit organization, and our mission is to pretty much teach the next generation of philanthropists, which is today's high school students. It allows ordinary teens the opportunity to experience the joy of giving money to nonprofits along the way, exploring the social needs of our community.
And Bill, what's your role with Magnified Giving?
You know, I kept running into Roger over the past 10 years, and every time I turned around, he was involved in something very, very special. And what Magnifying Giving does, and what I've learned from it, is that it teaches the next generation to make a difference. And as they learn through high school and college and they get out of school, over 80% of the people who come through the programs are still involved with community service, and 15 to 20% of them are involved in community boards, making a difference.
What does the program do exactly? Now that you're talking about it, I realize that my daughter went through it last year.
What we do, we work with area high school students. In fact, we have a middle school pilot program this year. We give them essentially $1,000 or more. We give them the training, the teachers the training, and they go through an entire process where they explore social needs, they identify the needs of the community, they research nonprofit organizations, they make site visits, they become inspired by other philanthropists such as Roger Grine, our founder, and at the end of the year, they give a grant for somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000 to the nonprofit at a large ceremony we have.
Now, do you provide the funding for that grant, or do they raise the money?
The organization raises the money. Roger's done so much for so many people that when he goes out and asks for support, they give it to him because they believe in his cause and what he does. And I went to the banquet last spring, and one of the things I remember was a student got up and he said, you know, I used to complain about all my homework and all the stuff I had going on in my life. And then I went into inner city to investigate the needs, and I realized how lucky I was. That's part of the impact of the program.
I think you learn sometimes that by giving, you receive a lot more than you give.
Now, we do offer the opportunity for students, because we want to inspire them to be philanthropists of their own, we provide them with matching grant opportunities. And we've had many organizations and schools over the years, including many of the colleges that Roger used to fund, who have taken on this program on their own, and it's fully funded now by the students.
Well, how many charities benefit from this program?
Financially benefit, well over 50 a year. In many other ways, they benefit. They get exposure. They get volunteers. They get people to learn about what their cause is and help kids identify their passion with the organizations.
How do the charities apply for the grants?
The charities don't apply for the grants. The charities are discovered by the students. The goal is for the students to go out and try to identify the social needs, do their research, and we provide them with some tools. And then they are contacted by the students and go through a process very much like many other foundations do. What we do, though, is we do have an opportunity for agencies who want to be on our radar screen. They can visit our website and they can let us know about their need. And as the students are doing their research, they can read that information and perhaps invite them to apply for an official grant.
Is the process such that the students first find a need and then determine if there's a charity that helps people that have that need?
Yeah, essentially. Many students are aware anymore with the community service, the good things that are going on in our community, but many of them have passions. We find that many of them are tied to veterans or to homelessness or to animals. Whatever the cause is, we want them to explore what their passions are.
People listening want to get involved. Is there contact information for them?
Absolutely. We have a website. It's www.magnifiedgiving.org. They can also call our number 821-513, area code 513-821-9044.
For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Bill Keating Jr. and Todd Foreman. Bill is a partner with Keating, Muthing, and Kleekamp. And Todd is a teacher, but also a part-time program director with Magnifying Giving. Todd, maybe you can just explain briefly what Magnifying Giving is all about.
Sure. Magnify Giving is a nonprofit organization started in 2008 by Mr. Roger Grine, a local businessman and philanthropist. And what we are doing is we are teaching the next generation of philanthropists. We're realizing, and Roger realizes, that we lost a lot of good philanthropists this year in Cincinnati. And we need to teach the next generation how to do that. So we give ordinary students the opportunity to invest money that we provide into the nonprofit community. And along the way, many things are obtained by the students: leadership skills, social need investigation, and the thrill of actually giving money to a nonprofit.
Well, what's the feedback been from that? I mean, what kind of feedback are you getting from the teachers about how the projects affect the kids?
We had a teacher from Roger Bacon who made a presentation, and she said, "Everything I need to teach my English class, my kids can learn through this program. Writing skills, research skills as they go in the inner city, writing skills as they prepare the grants and prepare the proposals, persuasion skills as they work with their committee mates as they try to decide what charity is going to get the proposal, and also the presentation skills when they go to the banquet and they make the presentation in front of 300 or 400 people.
I'm a teacher at Mount Notre Dame High School, and we have our youth philanthropy program. It's been around for about 7 years now. Our program has grown from 6 or 7 kids up to 70. And the skills that they obtain, that they generate, that the leadership skills, I hear from the parents all the time how wonderful a program it is, and it's probably our most popular program at our school.
Well, do you have any evidence yet? I guess it's not that old of a program, but some of these former students are now young adults. Are they getting more involved in philanthropy?
We found out that the kids, if they go through high school and college, more than 80% are still involved in community service, and 15 to 20% are involved in community boards. And we also see some of them either during high school or college, they go on and start their own nonprofit or go out and start a whole new cause to be able to support their organizations. And it's amazing. They start with Roger, and they start duplicating them themselves. Sometimes in Satan High School, I think, had somebody raise $30,000 the second year on their own.
Is that where you get the name Magnify and Giving, because it tends to magnify?
Correct. Right. I think Correct. Roger's original intent was that if you're a donor and you're going to give your money to a nonprofit, why not let it pass through the hands of high school students along the way? And it'll eventually make its way to a worthy nonprofit, but the hearts and minds of high school students will be touched, and so your money will be magnified.
How do schools participate in the program if they're not?
Well, the easiest way is to contact me, contact Roger. Let us know of your interest, and we will give you the opportunity to complete an application, and we'll be looking for our schools for next year to continue to add onto our program sometime late spring.
Well, and speaking of your website, maybe you can give that out so our listeners can have it.
Sure. It's www.magnifiedgiving.org, and it's a one-stop shopping, if you will, for how our program works. Agencies can click and find out how they can let the students know about their organizations. Donors can click to find out how their money is magnified, and students and teachers can find out how the program can work at their school.
You know, one of the neatest things about the program is that your school may have a mission fund drive or canned food drive, and you'll bring the cans in, but you don't really see the recipients of who gets those things. This is just the opposite. The kids go to the inner city, they go to different needs within the community and see actually what's out there and what's happening, learn about the causes, understand the causes, then they come back and try to, you know, figure out how to fund the causes, either Roger grants or the grants Roger gives for Magnify Giving or through their own fundraisers.
Thank you for everything you do with this program and in the community in general. For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.